Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guests tonight are Lauren Zamida, curator at the Fitchburg Art Museum, and Tori Fair, one of the artists of the exhibition Paper Town, on view at the museum till June 4th, 2023.
How long is this?
27 minutes.
Okay.
Tori, Lauren, yes. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Mark. Hello.
Lauren, we've talked a lot of times before, so I'm glad to talk to you again. Tori, we've never talked before, and I'm looking forward to talking about your work.
Thank you.
Now, we're talking about, first and foremost, Paper Town. Lauren, talk to me about Paper Town. I love this series that the Fitchburg Art Museum is doing.
Exactly. You hit the nail right on the head, noting that it's part of a series. And Paper Town is the third in this series of exhibitions that deals with regional industrial histories. So back in the day, we had Plastic Imagination, which spoke to the plastic industry of Leominster. We had Interior Effects, which was a nod to the furniture industry in Gardner. And now Paper Town is a celebration of Fitchburg's own history, which really thrived with the paper mills in town.
Now, is it just going to be a trilogy, or will there be more?
It was originally intended as a trilogy, but I want to keep going, and I'm thinking about a textile show next.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because, that seems sort of like an obvious thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like...
First of all, textile speaks to the whole region.
Yep, exactly. It goes out to Lowell, but also Fitchburg itself had textile mills. I feel like they were kind of everywhere.
Now, how do you recruit artists for these for these exhibitions? And talk to me about how you do it.
Yeah. So these exhibitions are really based around material. That's kind of the main organizing principle. And so for this show, I was looking for artists that worked with paper as their main material. And I was really trying to think about how paper can be transformed in artistic practice. And so I was looking for a variety of uses of paper, a variety of other sort of background concepts that come into it. And so there are 9 artists and artist groups in this show, and they all bring something different to the table, but it's a really kind of fun variety.
We have to at least mention the names of the other artists other than Tori who are in the show.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we have Andrea Dejo. We have Eric and Marty Demain, the father-son duo that works together. Fred Lang, Heidi Whitman, Hong Hong, Mae Babcock, Michelle Samore, and Wendy Wall.
Is that the first time you've ever had a father-son art?
It is.
that's
it really is.
Wow.
But they work so collaboratively. It's super interesting. They both are affiliated with MIT. The son, Eric, is a professor of computer science, and the father, Marty, is an artist in residence at MIT. So a really interesting mix of art and science and computers. Super fascinating.
That is really, really interesting. Now, did you already knew that these artists worked with paper in some way?
Mm-hmm.
And you just, like, call them up and go, do you want to be in an exhibition? I mean, what parameters do you give them?
That's a pretty accurate but short version.
I'm going to ask Tori for the real story later, but give me the official line.
So, for me, this show is a little different because it had been conceptualized so long ago by not even my predecessor, but her predecessor. With Nick Capasso and Mary Tinsey, they kind of came up with this idea of this series. And so when I started at FAM 2 years ago as curator, I had actually inherited not only the idea for the show, but a list of artists who worked with paper. So that first step was already done for me, which kind of never happens, but it was pretty awesome. And so I just went down and looked through the list of artists and thought about who was working in New England and just did studio visits with a whole bunch of people and kind of came up with this final list of 9 that I felt like they all complemented. I mean, they all have that paper as the organizing, central thing that they have in common, but they each approach it so differently, which is just, it's just really cool.
We're going to take a break and talk to Tori. Tori.
Hi.
When you heard this, were you excited to be part of this exhibition? And you can be honest with me and not Lauren.
I'll put my earmuffs on.
It is always an honor to be contacted by a curator and have a studio visit. So I hadn't met Lauren before, so it was a really great to have a studio visit with someone in the area who I hadn't met and who was working at Fitchburg Art Museum, which is a museum that is kind of a destination museum. It's really fun to go out and see the shows, and they've been kind of incredible in the in the variety and shows of artists in the area. So it's a really it's a great museum for artists.
Now, your pieces in this paper town are interesting in that they involve rocks. Now, there's paper, but there's other materials too. Let's start with Backpack. What materials are in there?
Well, Backpack is built from a structure of a backpack, my son's backpack, that had kind of passed its prime. And the
I hope so.
Yeah, the paper, I was using paper pulp, making lots of layers of the paper pulp with also other things that I layer into the process, which are little tchotchkes that I can't seem to throw out, or mm-hmm. little pieces of detritus that are in my studio or around my house. So Backpack was kind of a way to accumulate all of this extraneous stuff kind of bound together by the paper pulp and the rock.
Well, they're like paperweights. They're fixing these objects in time and space.
Yes, and the rocks became a theme as a way to really mark a place, almost like you put a rock down on a blanket when you're having a picnic or when you build a cairn, you mark a trail with rocks stacked on each other. So the rocks were a way to kind of really try and describe a specific site, a specific connection. And the backpack is, there's a little bit of humor in it because the backpacks, you know, you don't want to have a really heavy backpack.
No, that was the first thing I thought of. The first thing I thought when I saw the pieces. Whoa, I don't want to be using this backpack ever.
Yeah. It's the weight we carry around, right?
Yeah. That's exactly it. It's the weight that you're carrying around. It has, each object has a weird relationship with the rocks. Like the quilt, there are four rocks in each corner. And the first thing I thought of is, it's fixing the beautiful quilt down, but the quilt is now not usable.
Yeah, that's a great opposition in the piece. The quilt is a family heirloom, and I call it a family heirloom, but it's really like a quilt that no one else was going to take. So I thought, I've got to take it because it's a beautiful quilt. And I think
so. It's a leftover, really. Heirloom equals leftover.
And I struggle. I think a lot of people struggle with the sentimentality of, you know, when someone passes away in your family, and you want to preserve family history. And so this was a way I felt like if I incorporated it into a sculpture, it could speak towards that.
So you're fixing a memory and a relationship?
Yeah, I guess I'm both saying this is a place, you know, the four corners of the quilt now are held down almost like to keep them tangible and keep the quilt somehow in use and in function. And the like a lot of my work, it does become a little more cumbersome with the rocks.
But you do that on purpose.
Well, yes, you sculpture has a way of using physicality to talk about things that aren't physical at all.
Right. And slump, to me, that almost seemed kinetic. Because it was like a really tired pile of paper, an exhausted pile of paper.
Which is a good way of how, it's a good way of describing how sometimes your pieces become self-portraitures.
Now, you're a professor, right?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Is it Brandeis?
Yes.
So is that how you feel after a semester?
No, I have to say, my students always invigorate me, and I think that
you're required to say that, I know.
No, I'm not. I shout out to my class this semester. They're an amazing class, and I'm very lucky to work with young artists in the studio. When I'm not teaching, I'm in my studio, and These pieces actually were made right before the pandemic. So they have a couple years in them. So it was really a pleasure to bring them out for this show. But the slump piece is both the idea of falling off the wall and kind of slumping into the corner. But it's a common theme in my work to challenge that space between the wall, which is a more, accepted place for paintings and drawings. You kind of take that for granted. Sculptures, kind of having that fall onto the floor, it starts to then take up a space of a more literal sculpture than a wall painting.
Yeah, I had a totally different reaction to that piece than the other ones.
So did it make you feel tired?
Well, it made me thought of times in the past when I have been that tired, where you just want to, sort of collapse in that sort of edge space, and it's weird, and there's a weird feeling that it could move still.
Well, I love that about sculpture, that sculpture is often still, but it is really, you anticipate like what just happened or what's about to happen in the sculpture. So to me, it's a good sign that you felt something with the piece and you identified with that feeling. And so to me, that's all.
I got more of a gut reaction to that piece than I think to the other ones. Although I think the backpack, now that I think about it, because I use a backpack, that really made my back hurt.
Yeah. There are some common experiences with carrying too much.
Now, how do you choose the rocks? I'm not being frivolous. I mean, some of the rocks look very specific. I mean, are you just going out and picking up rocks, or what are you doing?
Well, rocks are, once you start looking around, you actually can come across a lot of rocks.
I know, especially here in New England, where don't have a lot of soil. We have a lot of rocks.
Yeah, so I definitely try and go for rocks that are in a place where they're not going to be missed.
Right.
But you could argue that, it's a really bad habit to pick rocks up from different sites.
Natural historian, I'll say it's not a good thing in general.
Right, right.
Because it's part of an ecosystem.
Certainly. And I lived a couple of years in Arizona, and it's actually a real problem when people take rocks from natural monuments and things.
I'm just trying to imagine you out there. Is it just happenstance, like you are doing something else and you see a rock and go, that would be good? Or you actually have a devoted trip to see and find rocks? I'm being serious.
Well, I can tell you, for Valentine's Day, my son and my husband picked up a bunch of rocks and brought me outside and said, "Happy Valentine's Day."
Wow, that's excellent. Oh my God. I love that.
So I don't know where they got those rocks, honestly, but I get a lot of rocks from construction on campus.
Yep.
At Brandeis. They're always very rocky campus out there. And I go on a lot of walks nearby here, and really the urban decay, you find kind of all these rocks that sometimes seem really out of place because they're on the sidewalk so I try and really go with misfit rocks that really aren't, embedded in the landscape they're in.
And it's funny, they have a sort of a neutral quality. In other words, they just look like the concept of rock. I'm being serious about this. So they don't have like odd things about them that would make them stand out. They're just the essence of rock.
Well, yeah, I guess I'm not going for like a showy, like everyday rocks.
Right, it's the rock. You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guests tonight are Lauren Zimita, curator at the Fitchburg Art Museum, and it is always a pleasure to talk to her. And one of the artists in the current exhibition, Paper Town, Tori Fair. The exhibition Paper Town is up till June 4th, 2023. Tori, I want to continue to talk to you. Now, you do photography too, correct?
Yeah, well, I get help doing photos of the work. I love photographing my sculpture, and for a long time I did it myself, but now I collaborate with people to take pictures of the, really high resolution documentation of the work.
I love seeing the history of your work on your website. It was fascinating. But some of your other current works, talk to me about protest flowers.
I'm glad you took a look. I've had a long-standing theme of using flowers in my work, and I started by actually 3D printing flower because it's really hard to cast a flower, something so fragile and fragrant, and then trying to get a mold on it and cast it in another material is a lot of trial and error. But I love casting flowers in really rugged materials in a way to transform them into something more industrial and kind of almost, to me, some of my flowers I feel like are tomboy flowers. They still take on the nature and the form of the flower, but they feel more like a tomboy in that they're, you know, in a different material that brings out perseverance and some kind of resilience.
There's several videos too on your website of the cast flowers, and they have a strange quality to them too. They're not like anything you've experienced, but like you said, they have the form of the flower, but the viewer is very aware of the material difference.
Yeah, in protest flowers, I cast a lot in silicone rubber, and the rubber has a great quality of movement, and so once I capture the flower, cast it in rubber, then I, with the help of an assistant, Paul Belenke, we welded the flowers onto a structure that you can crank them, and so you can move them. We did it with a motor, but also with a hand crank.
Wow.
So that's why when they started to move, I thought they're a little bit in protest with their own material that they're made from, and they're moving, and they feel like they're a little bit in protest to wake us up a little bit.
I want to talk to you about your history as an artist. Did you always start out doing sculpture and doing sort of installation work?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm going to say yes, because I grew up in a really old house in New Jersey, and my parents were always uncovering walls and having projects. And so I kind of grew up in a sculpture, and I loved all of the architecture, restoration carpentry just always seemed to be going on in the house. And although I thought I was going to become more of an architect, I got into sculpture and kind of never steered into the conventional. So
growing up, did you become familiar with tools and processes that you would later use?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic.
Always, yeah.
The history of your work, though, you always seem to grab onto an idea and work it out for a while. Like, you did a thing called ball courts, 2004. Talk to me about those. Those were amazing.
Well, thank you for taking a look. I was an athlete growing up, and I was always interested in the way.
You were a soccer player.
Soccer player, sure, yeah. And
what position?
So I played in the midfield. Although in college, I ended up playing sweeper, so I'm a big fan of defense. But I was always interested in the way the competitive lines on the courts and the fields kind of selected this space. And I started making ball courts as a way to bring that competitive space into more everyday interactions. So the first ball courts I made were influenced by the time I lived out in Arizona, where I worked actually near some ball courts, and so I love the history of the Mesoamerican ball courts as well.
Yeah, I know. I've seen those in person, and I try to imagine what it was like to play the game.
Yeah,
it seems a little bit extreme, especially the losers generally were killed or enslaved. But you know, space seems so important to a lot of your work. Physical space, like you did a series called On-Site Studio.
Oh, yeah.
Where you recreated the scale of your studio in different locations.
Yeah, and this was where paper became important. Again, because I use a lot of materials that are heavy and more cumbersome, paper I go to a lot as a way to make things portable and accessible. So when I wanted to basically draw the outline of my studio to scale, wanted to bring kind of the personal space of the studio into the more public space. And a lot of this happened, again, like right during the pandemic, where we were all struggling you know, how to reconcile what was going on. But when I, like, there's a parking lot down the road, I would pace out the studio and bring the paper, and the rocks were a way to hold the paper down. And so I created these makeshift studios, and people would interact with me sometimes. Sometimes they would just walk by, but it was a way to kind of have studio visits in a very spontaneous, unscripted way, and to kind of challenge the notion of what I was thinking about in the studio.
I noticed, first thing I thought of when I saw the pieces weighted by stones was the relationship that the pieces that you did for Paper Town.
Yeah, well, they all happened in a similar time frame. So I think when you're working, you're in a series. I like to think of that as like a chapter where paper and rocks were really the messengers. So
right, right.
I just love the way the paper allowed me to just feel a little less. It made me feel more able to get the work outside and move the work, and it was a great material to kind of pivot my process from my previous work, which was a big heavy stack of concrete and rubber, and that was of an endurance to
was that the area code piece?
It was the heap. It was
okay.
By title, you know, heap. It's a big, heavy, one-ton sculpture.
It's just a big pile of stuff.
Yep.
And it didn't look easy to move at all.
No, it was hard. It was hard. I had a great installation. I installed it in a few different places, and it was out at the Concord Art Center, and that was a really beautiful old house, which was a real wonderful sight for me, having grown up in one.
Do you make your own paper pulp?
Oh, you know, I tried to make my own paper pulp, and then I also reached out to a longtime friend, who Lee McDonald, who has a company who's been selling not only pulp but papermaking stuff for years. So he was a really great resource. But I ended up using some pulp from him, some pulp I tried to make, and then also some that I purchased.
Wow.
So it's a big mix.
Wow. Now, we're almost out of time, and I want to get Lauren. I hated to sort of leave you in the dark there while we were talking.
Not at all. The artists have the interesting things to say. So.
Well, Tori's a really interesting artist, and people. I really invite people. Tori, give out the website, your website.
Oh, yes, please visit Tori Fair, TORYFAIR.com.
Now, Lauren, let's review. How long the show is and what the hours are at the Fitchburg Art Museum.
Ooh, always a good test. The show is up until June 4th, as you mentioned. Our hours are Wednesday through Friday, 12 to 4, and Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 5. And if you don't mind, I would like to make a couple of plugs for some programs that are coming up.
Sure.
Would that be okay? Okay. Yeah. First, actually involves Tori here. On Wednesday, April 19th, there's going to be a school vacation workshop for families, which is going to be a hands-on workshop for kids that Tori is going to lead. That's going to be 1 to 3 p.m. On Sunday, April 30th, Mae Babcock is going to do an artist talk, and that's going to be part of our Art in Bloom weekend. You should check out our website if you're interested in going. There's some different hours and lots of events going on for Art in Bloom. It'll be really exciting. And the last one, the exhibition really deals with contemporary artists and their work, and Fitchburg's history is really just sort of a starting point for all of that. But there is so much interesting stuff related to that. There are labor concerns and environmental concerns, and we actually have an opportunity to dig into that a little bit On Sunday, May 7th, there's going to be a viewing of a film about Marion Stoddard called The Work of a Thousand. And she was an activist who really led the efforts to clean up the Nashua River, which was filthy when all of the mills dumped their dirty water back into it.
It was once considered the dirtiest river in America.
Yes, it's kind of a fascinating story.
It is an amazing story. It's an absolutely incredible story.
Yep. And then we're lucky to have Marion along with three other panelists for a panel discussion afterwards. So it's going to be Marion in conversation with Mae Babcock, who did a work about the Nashua River watershed. It will also have Sue Edwards, who's on the board at the Watershed Association, and Nick Capasso. So that, again, is Sunday, May 7th. It's going to be start at 2, go till about 3:30. And all of those already are or will soon be on our website if you would like to check it out.
And the website is?
Website is PittsburghArtMuseum.org.
All one word. And by the way, I want to compliment you on the website because it actually is functional.
Thank you.
And easy to navigate. And you got to come and see, Tori, I still haven't finished talking to you about your work, but we're going to run out of time because there are pictures of you rolling this huge thing. I think it was under area code.
Yeah. Boston had an art fair during the pandemic that was all outside. So it was safely spaced. And I rolled a sculpture called Portable Window in different parts of Boston. The big sculpture had a window that I would pause and it would frame a view. And it was a way to instigate conversation and look through the window together and really just share a view with people.
We're completely out of time, but I do want to mention also you did a project called Competitive Mundane. I just think it's worth the title alone.
That's right. Thank you so much for looking.
Oh, my God. I loved your website. My guests tonight have been Lauren Zamita, curator at the Fitchburg Art Museum, and Tori Fair, one of the artists in Papertown, which is up to June 4th, 2023. Really check out this exhibition. Actually, check out the entire museum. It is well worth a trip. Lauren, Tori, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.